I talked to some people there, and this, to me, was the best thing I got out of the prep for this episode. Brian Daboll believes this is the smartest rookie he's ever been around. To me, that stands out a lot, especially when you're going to lean on Carnell Tate the way they're going to have to lean on Carnell Tate.
Everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast, a live show. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me as always, the managing editor of TitanSize.com, publisher for NFL Draft on SI, and the Yada Yada King, my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, how you doing? Titans have 1 week of training camp in the books. Loosely using the phrase 1 week because they've only actually practiced twice, but they reported Tuesday, they practiced Wednesday, Thursday, they're walking through today, they are practicing again tomorrow, so technically the weeks are a little weirdly delineated, but from our standpoint, first week of training camp in the books. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, doing well. It's a Friday morning live stream as per usual. You do what you got to do to be here. You leave your wives, you quit your job. You are here on the show with us today. Numbers already going up. Graver can't get behind the leave your wife thing. He's newly married. But that's okay. I'm going to say it for him. It's just fine. But 1 week into camp, again, using that loosely, but they practice Wednesday, Thursday, walk through Friday. They'll be practicing again on Saturday, which is the first open practice to the fan base. Always lots of excitement there. And that'll also be the final practice of camp without pads. Once they practice on Monday, it'll be the first time that the pads are on. And that makes the world of a difference in terms of evaluating this football team, the offensive line, the defensive line, rookies and all that. So full steam ahead. Really excited about Wednesday, Saturday's practice and Monday.
So like the stream. Thanks for joining us. Subscribe to the channel. We're going to talk about the first week of Titans training camp, some of the storylines maybe that have emerged over these first few days, some topics that we briefly touched on earlier in the week but didn't have a chance to go deeper on without a practice to recap today, without press conferences to dive into today. We can really go a bit deeper on all the stuff that we haven't had a chance to talk about. And one of the things, Justin, that we haven't talked about at all, you mentioned that Saturday's practice open to the public. One of the new things the Titans have this year is new grandstands out by the practice field. It's going to allow for about, I think the number they said was 3 to 4 times as many fans at practice, which means two things for our purposes. Number one, the atmosphere at a practice when a nice play is made by either side of the ball is going to be off the charts. It's going to be electric. Something the Titans have never had in Nashville because they've never had this many people at a training camp practice outside of like the Nissan Stadium scrimmages. So that's awesome. Can't wait to see the atmosphere at practice. And number two, Justin, we might get some people, maybe people in the Audible Army even, who knows, out there getting some bootleg practice videos because Lord knows we need it. I mean, goodness gracious, I'm scrolling Twitter and I see like full 11-on-11 tweeted videos from Cardinals practice, Bengals, Bears. Like there's all these teams allow their fans, Vikings are a big one, allow their fans to go film practice. And maybe it says you're not supposed to do that. And I actually saw somebody post on Twitter that they got like a trespassing charge from the Vikings for taping practice videos and they're banned from practice for a whole year. So don't get caught and don't do it, but do it. I don't know what I'm trying to say, Justin. I just want more video of the Titans, like actual practice footage.
I think Easton tweeted that you people will get in trouble for doing it, but I imagine people are still going to do it and looking forward to it because it ain't my responsibility. I just enjoy, what comes of that. But we're a week into camp, as you noted. The biggest play yesterday was made by, arguably, at least on offense, and that's what everyone cares about, let's be blunt, was made by sophomore wide receiver Elik Iomanner. And we talked about it a little yesterday, but as we predicted on the stream, and it hadn't happened yet when we recorded, the play did hit the social media timeline. The Titans tweeted it out, tagging Elik Iomanner, tagging NFL Canada in the tweet, because yes, just like myself, Elik Iomanner is Canadian, although he's basically from another universe of Canada compared to where I'm from. Where Cam Ward, by the way, gorgeous sidearm release on the throw, throwing him open before he's even out of his break. You love the confidence from Cam Ward on the way he releases his ball. And Iomanner, talk about climbing the ladder, you know, high pointing the ball, going up and getting it above Titans starting cornerback Cordale Flott, and then the yards after catch to run it into the end zone. As soon as Iomanner gets up close, like, you've seen him at the podium, so he knows, but he just looks different, doesn't he? Like, the pads aren't even on yet, and he does really look big. He looks big. He looks a lot bigger. I mean, he's a big receiver, but he looks bigger than he was a year ago.
He does look big and veiny for sure, as Eli Cargill, or Elek Argyle, maybe, since we're talking about Elek Iemanjer here. Justin, one of the things that disappointed me about Elek Iemanjer in his rookie year was his inconsistency in contested catch situations. I mean, this guy is a big-bodied, large individual, athletic, big hands, size, strength. I wanted him to be better in contested catch situations last year. He made a few plays, but he didn't make enough plays, in my opinion. Now, here in this video from practice yesterday,
he's like a little conservative, right? Like he was last year. Like, it just feels like he didn't consistently play to his size.
Totally. And I think that now this is just one rep. And again, he did make some nice plays last year, so it's not like he didn't do this at all. But this shows me, number one, a lot of confidence. Going up for the ball with confidence, hands catch, hanging in the air over, I think that's Cordell Flott that he's making the catch over. I mean, there's nothing to not be impressed about this play, but I do think it also shows a little bit of growth. Like, number one, there's a lot of trust in Cam Ward. I'm going to try to pause this at the exact right moment here. A lot of trust in Elek, I should say, from Cam Ward.
Right.
Because when he throws this ball, when this ball comes out, I want to show you guys where Elek is in his break. Sound is coming through my headphones. Sorry. Here's the ball's out. Elek hadn't broke yet. Right? I mean, I'm doing a film breakdown of
throwing the ball with anticipation, a lot of confidence in his ability to go up and get that ball.
Exactly. Here's Cam Ward right here. He's got the ball is coming out. Is my mouse pointer showing on the screen? Yes, but very small. Sorry. If I rub it fast, does it get bigger? Yeah, there it is. Look at that. There's my mouse pointer.
This is getting outrageous.
Elek is just clearing this cornerback and getting into his break. Cam's already decided, I'm throwing it. He knows when to throw it. This is that off-season work showing up in practice here, the timing element of it, throwing him open. And then look here. Flott actually recovers nicely to sort of cut back inside. Iemanjer, he's on his outside hip here, away from the ball, but still, he's in decent position. That doesn't stop Iemanjer from confidently reading the ball, going up, skying high to make the grab. And then my favorite part, as soon as he secures it, you notice how he doesn't leave the ball out there hanging for a defensive back's hands to come in and break it up. He's already bringing it close to his body to shield it and turning. And then the yards after catch aspect of it, not, you know, somewhere Iemanjer excelled last year. It wasn't like he was bad in yards after catch, but the instinct to just immediately get upfield, and not only get upfield, but get all the way in the end zone. Now, there's no contact, there's no pads. We don't know how different this will look once the contact really starts, but this is an awesome play. And if this happens in a game, something like this, I imagine, Justin, you and I will be doing a very similar conversation we just had, breaking it down, looking at the footage frame by frame. Of course, we'll have real broadcast and all 22 footage to look at, and not some social media employee for the Titans filming it on their iPhone. But love it. Love this play. And I just think, like, this is going to lead to a larger conversation about Iemanjer here that we're about to have. But this was the highlight of practice yesterday on a day where the defense won the day. But even on a day where the defense wins the day, think about last year training camp. When the defense won the day last year, the offense did nothing. They didn't score touchdowns. They didn't make highlight reel plays. When there were days, and there were plenty of them, that the defense won the day last year, it was like they blanked the offense. And the offense got blanked. We saw it against the Texans last year when they got shut out 23-0, I believe, in like week 5 or 4. Early in the season, they get blanked by Houston. Maybe week 3, get blanked by Houston. Like, even on a day where the offense struggles, they still make plays like this. It's a very encouraging place to be just 2 days into training camp.
Agreed. I think good point, because as much as we don't want to believe it, but certainly, you know, last season, you could almost say that how bad they were on offensive training camp foreshadowed, right? Like, sort of foreshadowing into what they'd be in the season, which was not a good offense. So you'd like to, you know, pay attention to these things and monitor how they're going. But let's have the conversation. Or you want to take the first break and then have the Elek Iemanjer kind of bigger conversation?
You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak, all delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha Steaks because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak because it is steak ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game. Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie, I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. MyBookie! Welcome back, audio audience. Audio audience, you missed a lot. You always do. You got to be here. You got to be on YouTube. You got to be in the live show. Get your questions in the chat. We're going to answer as many questions as we have time for at the end of this. Let's resume the Alakia Manor conversation, Justin, because here's what I'm starting to think. I played a clip at the top of the show of my buddy James Palmer, frequent Heed the Call guest, former co-worker of mine at NFL Media and at Underdog. Actually, he was at Underdog, him and Steve Smith. Launched that show, 89, when we were all at Underdog together. Him and Steve did a whole episode on breaking down the Titans wide receiver room. It's like 29 minutes long. Highly encourage everyone to go watch it. But they're talking about the Titans receivers, what they did last year, especially with Chim Dike, Alakia Manor, and Calvin Ridley, and talking about like where they struggled last year, where he was impressed, what he's hoping to see from them this year. Talk about Carnell Tate, obviously, Wandale Robinson acquisition. It's a great pod. I recommend everyone to go watch it. And shout out James, who came on Heed the Call yesterday to talk about a bunch of stuff. So it's a great program, great guys that do great work. They talked about Alakia Manor being like this guy that Steve Smith said he wasn't super impressed with in college, but he is impressed with what he did as a rookie. He sees areas of his game he can grow, loves it. He'll stick his nose in there and block in the run game. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but I really do think like throw the roles out the window, maybe, but you do still need somebody to line up in isolation on the boundary. That's your X receiver. You still need somebody that you're going to send in motion before the snap or have, you know, playing 3 yards off the ball at the snap. And you need somebody that's going to man the slot, whether that's Wandale Robinson or a tight end or somebody else. Like, you are going to fill the standard football positions, even if they're not going to rigidly ask guys to play certain roles. You do need somebody that can play X. And we talked about how Carnell Tate, you know, could be that X. We've also talked about how his best fit in the NFL might be at Z. And I said this yesterday, but I'll say it again. I really think we've undervalued or underrated what Alakia Manor can do for this team. Like, Steve and James were talking about how they think Alakia Manor can be a really good number three receiver in this league. And when you have Carnell Tate and Wandale Robinson, you don't need him to be a really good number two. You only need him to be a really good number three. And if that's his, like, if he does that in year two, then this is a guy that can keep growing and keep becoming a better and better receiver as Calvin Ridley ages off the roster this, you know, after this season, as Wandale Robinson keeps getting older, as Carnell Tate grows into a more dominant wide receiver one role. Alakia Manor is going to be a great supporting, supplemental, contributing option. And I've started to come around on the idea that, like, here's a question. We expect the top three guys in receiving stats for this team to be Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson, and who? A tight end third? A running back third? Alec Iemanuir third or fourth behind a tight end? Gunnar Helm going to be third? Like, where do you... What's your realistic expectation for where Iemanuir could rank on this team in receiving stats?
Well, it's interesting. You didn't even list Calvin Ridley, I don't think, as a possibility.
I'm over
Calvin. You're very over the Calvin Ridley experience, but it's like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know, or we'll have fun predicting, but what I want to focus on is I love the competition that's going to be occurring for that spot, right? Like,
yeah.
Calvin Ridley's had 1,000 yards in the NFL on numerous occasions. Like, Calvin Ridley could be their number three receiver, and maybe their guys don't come close to him, right? Like, that's possible, right? He's a true wild card. We don't know what to expect from him because he was disappointing last year. He got hurt. He's over 30. It was a season-ending injury. Although, it doesn't sound like he's showing any ill effects of that injury. Like, everyone is saying he's moving around really well when he was active at OTAs and camp so far early on. So it's like, it could be Ridley. It could be Iemanuir. It could be Gunnar Helm. Or, you know, I don't think it's going to be Daniel Bellinger. I'll say this. I don't think it's going to be Daniel Bellinger. I don't think it's going to be Shimeray DK, in all honesty. And I don't think it's going to be a running back. I think the number three leading receiver on the team will either be Ridley, Iemanuir, or Gunnar Helm. And I'm leading a lot of possibilities there. I'm certainly not going bold, but that's sort of where my expectation is right now.
You know, I agree. I think, like, I want it to be Helm. I am not worried, but I am suspicious of how this tight end usage is going to shape out. And that, like, you know, Helm and Bellinger could split the stats of, like, a traditional tight end one in the league, or maybe that's like a fantasy football term.
I think both those guys, if the Titans have 1,000 offensive snaps this year and we're spitballing, like, they each have 500, you could convince me on that.
Yeah, I agree. But I do think that Iemanuir has a pretty strong chance to be the number three receiver statistically speaking on this team, including every player, tight ends, running backs, all of it. Because of how I think they're going to use the tight ends, how I do think Bellinger is going to get a decent amount of work in the passing game, and how he's going to be splitting that time with Gunnar Helm, it's going to make it harder for either of those two guys to actually be the number three receiver, which opens the door, I think, for Alec Iemanuir. I think he's going to play a lot. I think he's going to play a lot on early downs because he might be their best blocker. I mean, it's either him or Carnell Tate. Carnell Tate's a rookie who's never blocked an NFL defensive back in his life in
he's
a game
a
setting
he's
before.
He's a little slender, too, right? He's on the slender.
He is, but I don't know if you've heard this stat. Steve Smith won't shut up about this stat. This stat makes me roll my eyes at this point, but whatever, I'll say it myself. We talked about this when he was drafted. Steve Smith has talked about this during the draft area. He mentioned it again on this episode of 89 that I've been talking about, that Carnell Tate had over 600 blocking snaps in college with zero holding penalties. So he's not a guy, despite maybe a slender frame, that ever feels the need to, like, grab or reach or do any of the things that a slender guy might need to do to block a heavier defensive player. At the same time, he's blocking DBs most of the time. It's not like he's blocking linebackers, definitely not blocking defensive ends or anything like that. But, you know, DBs, he could block. My point is that if Carnell Tate's not the best blocker on the team, which I'm not going to sit here and say a rookie is the best anything at anything, Iemanuir is probably the best blocking receiver on the team, which is going to open the door for him to get a lot of snaps on early downs in play action situations where they want to sell run and he's the one on the field. We know he has a great chemistry with Cam Ward. We saw them make a number of off script plays, especially the ones going back opposite Cam's rolling right and he's moving left. Cam's first touchdown comes to mind. The play against the Texans comes to mind where Iemanuir and Cam just are on that same page. And if he continues making plays like we saw him make in practice yesterday, he's the only guy I think with touchdowns in consecutive days at training camp, like, he's going to have a bigger role than people are expecting, and I'm excited for what he can be this year. I know I'm not expecting him to put up 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns or anything, but I think he's the type of guy who could dot his game log for this season with a couple 100-yard games, a few 7-catch games, of like probably 5 to 7 touchdowns, big red zone threat. Like,
He had 4 touchdowns last year, I think, and they were terrible, right? So it's definitely room for growth. And he had 400-something yards, I believe. So certainly if he can be the 3, does he get to that 550, 600 receiving yard mark? Again, I think a lot of that depends on Calvin Ridley being such a big wild card. But I like a lot of what you said, and I started a question. I plan to get to it later, but I think I'm going to get to it now about DK. Someone said, what's wrong with DK? I don't think, Joe, that there's anything wrong with DK. I really like the direction Graver took that answer in, or that statement, whatever you want to call it, about I think Io Manor just gives them something different that they can't really get anywhere else on the roster. He's certainly the biggest receiver on the team, right? That's going to be active on game days. He's the only one with a truly traditional X skill set. And what I loved about what Graver said is, like, when you factor in that, I'm confident saying he's going to be their best run blocker. So when you do take that into account, that gets him on the field more than it does DK. Where when you look at DK, who's got a dynamic skill set in his own right, he's explosive, he's more athletic than Io Manor, he's more explosive, he's faster than he is. But when you look at what he gives them as a receiver, it's really not all that different than what Calvin Ridley and even Wandale Robinson gives them, where these guys who can both play the slot and can both play, you know, Robinson is small, but he played some Z last year for the Giants. So, like, that's what DK gives them. That's what Ridley and Robinson gives them, right? So there's maybe a bit more competition there for DK with receivers who are more proven, and they've got more invest, certainly in Robinson, they've got more invested in. When I look at what Io Manor gives them, who's he competing against? You could argue Tate, right, if you've got Ridley on that roster, and that changes that, right? Like, if he's competing against Tate, then it's Tate, right? But the way they get all three of them on the field is a lot more realistic to me, with Io Manor at X and Tate at Z, and potentially, you know, Robinson in the slot. So again, like, all this, you know, is impacted by what Calvin Ridley's going to be. And we don't know what he's going to be, in my opinion. I don't feel like I know what he's going to be. I don't think anyone should. And Joe, you say you think DK is better. I think that you can say that. That's, you got an argument there. But I just think when you look at how they're going to split these roles up, it's just, there's a cleaner pathway for Io Manor getting onto the field as a receiver than it is for DK. And that just, you know, it definitely has an impact on that conversation.
Like, I think DK can be a decent receiver himself, too. Somewhere in that wide receiver 3-4 territory, I think he's more than just a gadget guy. But at the same time, like, a lot of his production last year was on sort of manufactured stuff. Like, most of his touchdowns outside of, I think, the deep one against New England was, like, you know, a little goal line rollout where he happens to be the guy.
He had that great off-script against Kansas City, too, right? They showed on quarterback. I mean, that was off-script. I think it was him, right, on the sideline.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great catch and a great, you know, I mean, it was really a great throw more than anything to make that play happen. But I'm just talking about, like, his production as, like, a guy who lines up and beats a man one-on-one or settles into the soft spot of his own. Like, yeah, he did that a little bit. He also struggled to, like, make some catches over the middle on low throws that are almost low on purpose to stay away from the defense. Like, my point is not that DK wasn't good or anything like that, but it's not like he was an outstanding receiver who was, like, blew Io Manor away. I do
they
think he was
should have played him more early. Keep in mind, like, Io Manor played a lot more early. DK didn't because they had Lockett. So DK came into the lineup a lot later.
Yeah.
And essentially matched Io Manor's numbers from a receiving yardage or close to its standpoint. But I'm with you on that. And, like, when I think about that, addressing this question from Jordan, well, DK will rotate with Wandale for slot play, but how much do you expect Wandale to come off the field? They gave him $70 million, and he has spent his whole career playing for Brian Daboll and playing that position for Brian Daboll. So when they have a slot receiver in their, you know, in their personnel, I think it's going to be Wandale Robinson 98.5% of the time.
I don't think DK plays a large receiver role this year unless somebody gets hurt. That's where I'm at. 2 days into training camp, that can change, certainly, of course. But and DK does have decent size. He's not this small gadget shifty guy that we make him out to be. Like, he is shifty and he is quick, and he does
play big has been his issue, right? He's been getting off press coverage is a big knock on him, in my opinion.
Well, let's just slow down on calling people. Let's slow down on he doesn't current future tense and say he didn't. Rookie year is tough for everybody.
Not
so let's
play
see.
Big as a rookie.
Right. Let's see how all these guys continue to develop. I want to talk a little bit more about the receiver room. We're coming up on needing to take a break. Screw it. We can keep going for just a little bit. I want to talk about the Gunnar Helm stuff because there's a lot of comments. You know, people, look, I don't want to, like, pour cold water on any fun, exciting time, especially at the end of July, literally the last day of July. Like, I want us all to be excited about everything that's going to happen for this team while we still can be before we get thoroughly disappointed in September. But I know in the more recent last few years of NFL world, there have been tight ends that come into this league and take it by storm. You know, I'm thinking of like Sam Laporta and tremendous rookie season. Kyle Pitts, largely been a disappointment since his tremendous rookie season. Obviously, you had Colson Loveland, Tyler Warren coming to the league last year, Brock Bowers, Trey McBride. There's been a lot of tight ends that have come into the league and contributed and produced at a high level right away. But traditionally, tight end is a position that takes a bit of time for guys to adjust to the league, to playing it at this level at a high rate and putting up big time numbers. And I look at someone like Travis Kelce, you know, didn't break out until like his fourth or fifth season in the NFL. Like, I'm not saying Gunnar Helm's going to take a long time, but we got some comments here. The truth. I'm telling y'all, Gunnar Helm might be the next great tight end. I'm calling it now. Roster grids. My most egregious take is that I see a George Kittle in the making with Helm. And look, maybe you guys are right. And maybe that could be the case. George Kittle in his first year as a rookie had 43 catches for 515 yards and two touchdowns. That sounds a lot like Gunnar Helm's stat line last year. Gunnar Helm wasn't quite as productive, but he did finish with 44 catches for 357 yards and two touchdowns. I mean, Kittle had one fewer reception, but almost 150 more yards as a rookie. As a sophomore, George Kittle had 88 catches. It was actually his best, most productive season in the NFL to date. 88 catches, 1,377 yards, and five touchdowns. I'll sign up for Gunnar Helm to have a season like that all day long. I just don't think he's going to. And I still think, look, I went to Texas. I watched every game Gunnar Helm played at Texas, including his breakout final year at the school where he set every tight end single season receiving record that the school of Texas has. I just don't know that it's going to be this year. Like, I think we see him take a big step forward this year, but I do, like, they paid Daniel Bellinger $8 million a year, a guy who's played for Brian Daboll, who himself has been relegated to like a tight end two, tight end three role for his whole career so far. You give him that much money and bring him to an offensive coordinator that already knows him and has coached him for 4 years. Like, he's going to give that guy snaps. I'm not saying Bellinger's tight end one, but he's going to have a real role in this offense. I just don't think that there's enough to go around. I mean, what are you guys expecting? You think Cam's going to throw for 5,500 yards? Like, everybody wants Wandale to be a 1,000-yard receiver, Tate to be a 1,500-yard receiver, Helm to be a 1,000-yard receiver. Iron Man, we're talking about. Like, there's too many mouths to feed for all these guys to put up massive numbers. So, Gunnar Helm could take a big step forward, but I think he could still be a year away from like a true breakout, George Kittle style breakout season.
I'm fully on board, and we're going to take a break and hit all the super chats after my response, not rebuttal because I agree, but I just don't think the volume's going to be there for him. Like, we can't have it every way, right? Like, we're so excited about how deep this receiver room is, and we think Carnell Tate and Wandale Robinson have huge roles. We spent half this episode talking about what Alec Iomanner can be. We talk about, you know, Calvin Ridley. Some of you think DK is going to have a bigger role than Iomanner. Like, they're five deep at wide receiver. They're going to get the running backs involved in the passing game a little bit, right, with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears, and they want to run the ball too, so it's like, I just don't think the volume is there for Helm this year. I'd be surprised if it was, even from a targets and a snaps perspective. I think Gunnar Helm's going to be a good tight end in this league, a starting caliber tight end. I don't know that he's going to be Travis Kelce, George Kittle elite. I don't think they need him to be the way that this roster is built right now. He just needs to be a good, productive, viable member of the offense. And that's what I think he's going to be. And I'm with you on the Bellinger thing. $8 million a year, 3 years, $24 million. Having spent his entire career playing for Brian Daboll. And guess what? As of right now, he's the better blocker. Like, he is the better blocker. So, like, I can't get on board with this. Like Noah Gray, what the Kelce, it's not going to be that big of a difference between these two guys. Noah Gray doesn't make $8 million a year, right? So it's like, there's going to be a fair difference, I think, between, there's not going to be a big difference in the snap count between Gunnar Helm and Daniel Bellinger. That hurts the volume side of it. let's take a break. I want to talk about something that Robert Saleh said during the Thursday press conference after the after the break, and let's hit the super chats while we're on break.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. If you only knew what you didn't get to hear because you're listening to this while you mow the lawn or go running or drive your car, instead of joining us live on Fridays or even watch the replay on YouTube. But anyway, we are back. Let's continue talking. Justin, you said you had some stuff from Saleh's presser you wanted to touch on.
I'll try to run rapid fire on it because we've already been going for a while and you had some other thoughts you wanted to get into. But and it wasn't nothing we didn't know, but Will Lomas in advance here wrote a really good article dropping on Monday on Titan Sized about how Robert Saleh just flat out pretty much said at the podium that Brian Daboll's got full autonomy over this offense, right? And I think we expected that. But the way that Saleh answered those questions were really interesting. He said, I'm not a micromanager. I'm paraphrasing, but I hired who I believe are the best football coaches in the world. And I hired them to do their job, and I've got all the trust in the world in Dabes. And the overarching theme that Will wrote the article about that I think was very well written and was a good topic is, like, Cam Ward's development is essentially in Brian Daboll's hands here, right? Because Robert Saleh, as he put it, is not a micromanager. Now, he said, of course, like, I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to challenge Brian Daboll. I'm going to make sure the offense is what we want it to be. But he knows offense, I know defense, and we'll challenge each other and have fun with it. And I think one of the notes that Lomas is going to make in that article that I love is, like, there's a lot of ego involved in coaching as well. So it's, to me, it's like, it's important when you're able to remove the ego from that, know what your strengths and your weaknesses and your limits are. Why would my mic be popping? I have no clue. We made no changes to the show whatsoever.
Yeah, you're clipping back and forth. Maybe you try a refresh and I'll filibuster for a bit.
Okay.
Sorry, guys. I wanted to catch that because I noticed it actually happened a couple of times earlier this week and I managed to recover a better version of the audio, but I don't think I would have been able to do that this time. Pratt, Jason Pratt, with a nice comment here that you can watch the YouTube stream / listen to the YouTube stream while not watching the YouTube stream. Like, you can just have it playing through your phone on YouTube instead of on the podcast app, and then you would be getting all of the content that you're missing. Sorry to cut you off, Justin. Let's see if your mic's working and continue.
No, I was just noting about that. Perfect. I was just noting that. I think it's a good sign that Robert Saleh understands his strengths, knows what his limits are, his weaknesses. It almost makes him a bit of a CEO-style coach when you're not touching the offense. But that works in today's league, too. I mean, Dan Campbell, Mike Vrabel, some of the best coaches in the NFL are CEO-style coaches, and excited that, you know, that for this offense to be in the hands of Brian Daboll and for him to be the one overseeing, you know, Cam Ward's development.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it shows, a level of maturity from Saleh. On the one hand, I know people are scared because they're like, oh, what if Brian Daboll leaves after 1 year and then Robert Saleh didn't even coach Cam Ward and blah, blah, blah. It's like, first of all, I've shared my thoughts on this many, many times, but, like, the idea of Brian Daboll leaving after 1 year and being truly the hot head coaching candidate in a world where Nate Shielhouse didn't get a job and everybody loves him, and Chris Shula didn't get a job and everybody loves him, and, you know, 50 other guys interviewed for head coaching jobs last year, Davis Webb, and there are so many up-and-coming, like, hotshot minds that are just simply going to get a chance before Brian Daboll. Further, if you're Brian Daboll and, like, this, you know, a version of last year's Cardinals job opens, and that's the only offer you get as Brian Daboll, like, let's say it's the Jets. You know, Jets fire Aaron Glenn after this season. If you're Brian Daboll, like, do you want to stake your entire second chance at a head coaching job, probably your last chance at a head coaching job, on the Jets? No, if I'm Brian Daboll, I'm waiting for the perfect opportunity to finally make that second leap as a head coach. So I am personally not worried about Brian Daboll leaving after this year. I'll eat all the crow in the world on that. If I got egg in my face at the end of the, you know, in January, February next year, so be it. I just think it is.
Means they had a great year.
Exactly. I think it is such an overblown concern that is really way less likely to happen than people make it out to be. I love that Robert Saleh wants to let his coordinators do their job, and I love it for multiple reasons. Number one, Saleh can focus on what he needs to focus, because being the head coach comes with a lot more responsibilities than being a coordinator, things that you would never, ever think a head coach should ever have to worry about. If you haven't read it, Seth Wickersham wrote a piece on basically Sean Payton and the Broncos allowed him to sit in and observe their postseason run, I think it was, or was it the season? I can't remember exact specifics now. And he's detailing the day-to-day activities that Sean Payton has to handle as the head coach. It's a really great, insightful piece. And there are so many things that you never think a head coach has to worry about that just take up time and space in your brain. So Robert Saleh, let these guys do their job. Allows him to focus on what he needs to focus on as a play calling head coach. That's a lot already on your plate. And number two, I'm good with it because he said it, he's going to say that he has the best coaching staff in the world because, you know, we can't say anything else to a public forum setting, but he does have a bunch of guys with a ton of experience in their current roles, in head coaching roles, who are now taking a step back to their current roles. So why not let your coordinators run with, you know, Brian Daboll has developed quarterbacks. He developed Josh Allen. He developed Jackson Dart for half a season last year, but still, he knows what he's doing in this regard. So let him go do his thing. And Saleh's still going to have input. It's not like he's totally hands off, but he also isn't going to be a control freak about it. And I think, or micromanage, I think was the word Saleh used. And I think that's good. That's the right way to get the most out of this roster. I wanted to talk about what Dan Moore said yesterday when he said that, because I think he was asked like a lot of changes. What do you like about, you know, what's the building like? And he said,
I just feel good energy in the building. You can just feel good vibes as soon as you walk in. I think they did a good job with coaching changes, brought good leaders in, and you could just feel the flow of things. It feels professional, feels organized. Just feels like winning culture.
Now, that to me, it's not a literal direct shot at Brian Callahan's tenure as the head coach, but it is a little bit of a shot. I mean, he's saying that, you know, this is a guy who was here last year for this 3-win team that was absolutely terrible, saying that this year it feels professional. It feels like a winning culture. And I don't bring this up on its own because Zach Lyons, I mentioned Zach was tweeting really good training camp notes after Wednesday and Thursday's practices. And one of the things that he included in one of his notes was that practice feels intentional, that they're taking advantage of every moment. And even more than that, that there is a ton of communication happening on the field. He said last year's coaching staff would rarely be vocal during a practice. Like, they would maybe call out a play and then let the guys run. He said during installation, during individual, during any kind of drill, the coaches are constantly reinforcing the why to their players and they're communicating more with each other. Last year's staff was way more quiet. And we've heard Robert Saleh talk about the intentionality behind speaking, behind feeling confident. The louder you are, the more confident you sound and you probably are. And we're going to be loud as shh. Because we're going to be confident and we're going to be loud. And I think that is like, I just think we do, this goes both ways in sports and sports media and sports analysis. Sometimes we underrate the coaching importance. Sometimes we overrate the coaching importance. Sometimes it's just about having good players. But I think to achieve a baseline level of competitive in the NFL, coaching is very important. And then what your ceiling can be is sort of more dependent on player and superstar level talent on your roster. And I just don't think we can understate how big of a transformation this is going to be. That it feels professional. That practice is run professionally. That communication is openly flowing during practice. That is so important because, Justin, how many times last year did I come on this podcast or you come on this podcast after a game during a recap show and talk about how unprepared the team looks, about how it feels like they have no plan, about how it feels like they don't know how to attack an opponent's weaknesses or do anything right, miscommunications, pre-snap penalties, all the issues that this team underwent through 2 years of Brian Callahan. Like, you know how you fix those things? You don't fix those in a Monday morning meeting after a loss. You fix those by teaching the players why they're doing what they're doing while they're doing it in training camp right now. This is the time to avoid that stuff. You can't fix it in October. You have to pre-plan to not have to fix it in August. And that's what they're doing.
Listen, we know that the coaching staff last year was a terrible staff. And I have no doubt that they weren't vocal enough. They weren't teachers. I mean, you and I harped on that a lot last year, right? Like, they're not true teachers of the game. And so I have no doubt. I mean, this coaching staff's a monumental upgrade, right? What does, I guess I don't want to throw a wet blanket on it, but like, you know, player comments about a new staff, like, remember when they fired Vrabel and hired Callahan and Harold Landry was like, oh, it's refreshing in the building. But like, no, it was the downgrade of a generation, right? Like, so it's like, you can't always take what they say at face value. But I have no doubt that Robert Saleh is 50 times the coach that Brian Callahan is, and that this staff is a whole lot better than it was, you know, a year ago. Thank you, Dave. David Jenkins said I sound great. Maybe add a pound or two. I'm going to go get Chick-fil-A for dinner later today when this ends. Literally, we're getting Chick-fil-A. So, you know, hopefully that'll put on a pound or two.
Maybe just look at some pounds and then gain it the way J.C. Latham can, Justin.
I wish.
All right. Any questions? Anything else we need to hit? I feel like we have talked about a lot. We've been going for a good bit now. The stream is at 100
practice today, and we didn't know what we were talking about 30 minutes before we started. I think we've done pretty good.
The stream has hit 107 likes, so you guys came through. Appreciate you all. There's still 142 people here, which, like, assuming that everyone here has been here the whole time, that's still 35 people who haven't liked the stream. So it's like, what do you do? You don't like us? That's fine, I guess. But like, how hard does it hit? Okay, let's get to the last topic here, because if people want to know, I started a bunch of comments about this. I wanted to answer this one first too. Roster Grid said this a while ago when we were playing the Ellicott Manor clip.
Super Horn.
Yeah, also a Broadway alum, Super Horn, also a Texas Longhorn alum. Fun fact, me and Super Horn were in the same fraternity at Texas about 15 years apart. Isn't that crazy?
I don't think I knew that. I know so much about you and Super Horn, but I didn't know that.
He said that Super Horn made a good point about Cam's footwork on the throw. His arm talent makes up for it again, but it's still something he needs to work on. I understand what you mean. There's a moment, though, in this throw where Cam sort of like, I can't tell if he's like hitching his feet or just pulling the ball through. It looks like he's under a little bit of pressure and evading a rusher. It's really hard to see his full footwork from the angle that we have, so I'm going to try to withhold any judgment, but it is something that he needed to work on coming into this year, so it's something that we'll definitely keep an eye on. All right, the Discord convo. Eli/Ellick Argyle/Cargyle says, Discord would be very fun. Stingray jumps in, Discord would be great. I don't know what a super battle golf game is, but he wants to get one of those going. Roster Grid's Discord offers a lot of flexible community space options. I only want it so we can have a decent Titans community outside of Twitter and Reddit, which can be very draining. As someone who doesn't use Twitter or Reddit, I agree as well. A form of community I could participate in willingly would be great. We have a big announcement coming on this. We're not ready to make it today. Justin and I still need to figure out some details, but I guess the long and the short of it is, like, we hope to launch in the near future a Music City Audible Army Discord. I have to ask the audience now, would you all be disappointed or deflated or upset with us if we created sort of an Audible Army membership and offered ad-free versions of the audio podcast, bonus Q&As with us as paid-only streams of some kind, and access to this Discord server? Is that something you guys would be interested in? Let us know in the comments. Let us know in the live chat, because we're working on this. We want to bring the ultimate Titans community, and we want to build it out from the Audible Army. So let us know if this is something you guys would be interested in, and we might be able to make it happen. That's all I'll have to say. Justin?
And we do truly believe that this Audible Army and this community that we've built on this channel is incredible. And we're not just saying that. So to think of having a bunch of us together, in a Discord where Craver and I will make ourselves available to you guys for even more than we already do by chatting with you in there. Of course, you know, there's so many, you guys will have conversations amongst yourself in there, obviously, as well. But it really is something that we've been exploring for a couple of months now. And like Graver said, I would say, you know, near future.
Yes. And the one caveat here is that unless you separately pay for YouTube Premium, there will still be ads in the YouTube version of the show. It would be an ad-free audio podcast. YouTube literally doesn't allow us to make an exclusive version of this YouTube show that doesn't have YouTube ads.
And listen, I'll be totally blunt, and I want to hear the feedback here in the comments. Like, I don't think that that's the big draw for you guys to sign up for a paid version of Discord. I'd like to think that the draw is a community that we could all be a part of where you've essentially got 24/7 access, you know, to Graver and I, and just having one giant group chat, and we'll answer, well, like you said, Graver said, we'll do exclusive Q&As in there, go back and forth with you guys. I'd like to think that's what's going to draw you guys over there, is having that sense of community that we could all have together. And you guys could ask it when we're not live, we could comment with you guys and chat with you in there. Like, that's what I think the point of it is, but you let us know what, you know, what you think the draw, or what you guys want the draw to be for like a member only Discord.
Yeah. So let us know, sound off in the comments, as Dan Hansis would say. And, I think that'll do it for this episode. Justin, should we just like draw this out for 3 more minutes so we can say we went over an hour, or should we wrap up the show?
Like, I mean, like Roster Grid says here,
yeah,
like, the draw is the community with you guys is the commander in chief. Like, that's what I think it is. Like, and full disclosure, like RP saying here, like, don't gatekeep it with cash. We will still freely donate, but keep the info open to everyone. Like, to run a Discord, to make ourselves available to it, it's a big commitment. And Graver and I are already, you know, spent a lot of time committed to this show. If we're going to add a Discord to what we're doing, then there's got to obviously be some give and take there, right, on both sides.
Here's an idea. We can create two levels of this. A free Discord for MCA Audible Army members to get in there and chat. And then we have a tier that is reserved for exclusive access that you and I will be a part of, that we can jump in, that we'll host Q&As in, AMAs, all that type of stuff, get topic suggestions from you guys, because sometimes we want to know what you want us to talk about so we can deliver the best product to you. We could keep like game day live watch parties exclusive to that tier, and then everyone can be included, but then there's also benefits that, you know, are make it worth our time and effort to do this in addition to our full-time jobs. So we want to, you know, serve everybody.
That's exactly this, which is probably the idea. That's probably the best idea, in all honesty, right? Like, maybe you and I aren't in some of the channels that are for free, who people just want that sense of community amongst each other. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. All right. Tears is perfect, says the chat. Look at that. We just brainstormed on the fly. We figured it out, and we got 85 seconds closer, 95 seconds closer to making it to an hour.
Well, I wanted to address this, so we're going to get there. Hayden Fiedler, right?
I think yes. Hayden, we screwed this up earlier in the week.
Yes, Hayden Fiedler. Are we really not going to talk about taping the smartest rookie Dable has ever had? I don't know when you join the stream, Hayden, but we opened today's show with the clip of James Palmer saying that Carnell Tate. So we played the clip to start the show. I guess you and I didn't talk about it a whole lot, if you want to add.
Yeah.
60. I mean, listen, I think it's great. I love it. He's been around a lot of great performing Malik Nabers, Josh Allen, superstars in the league. It increases my excitement about what Carnell Tate can be and what he can produce this coming season, you know, for the Titans. So, I'm pumped about it, and I think sky's the limit for Carnell Tate. You and I have both said we think he's going to be like the primary read on most of the dropbacks. So, we the pre-draft stuff from TJ Houshmandzadeh, like, we know how much Brian Daboll loved Carnell Tate throughout the pre-draft process. It only adds, you know, the what James Palmer said, only adds to the growing legend, if you will, that is Carnell Tate.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I think Carnell Tate is, I think it is important, and we didn't talk about it at all, so I'm glad you said what you said. But in terms of like hitting the ground running and contributing from day one as a rookie, like, the biggest thing always for any rookie entering the league, yeah, there's some physical demands when you go up against bigger, stronger, faster athletes, and your body is still like a 22-year-old, not as developed like muscular-wise, like athletic build-wise. You haven't been in an NFL strength and conditioning program yet. Sure, there is a physical boundary that you have to get over. But the mental acumen it takes to pick up a new offense and do it at a professional level. You're not in school anymore. This is your full-time focus and job. I do think the NIL era has sort of made it feel more professional for guys entering. Like, that transition is a little bit easier. But still, the mental side of learning an NFL offense is the biggest roadblock to rookies contributing early in their careers. And the fact that Carnell Tate is going to be, as James Palmer was told by somebody in the Titans organization or with knowledge, that Carnell Tate is the smartest rookie Brian Daboll's ever coached, that does matter. It matters a lot. It may not matter for like what Carnell Tate's doing in week 15, but for what he's doing in week one, it really matters a lot. And it also means that this coaching staff is going to feel confident in trusting him to roll out as their wide receiver one from the first game of the season, and also trust him to play multiple positions, which allows him to have better matchups. It allows them to put him in a better position to succeed because they feel like they can trust him to play the X, to play the Z, to play out of the slot, to do whatever, to know all the positions. James and Steve talked to Brian Hartline earlier this summer, and they asked him about Carnell Tate. And Hartline told him the same thing, that Tate was one of the smartest guys he's ever coached, that he's the type of guy that, not even trying, will learn every position on offense. He'll know what the offensive line pass pro is supposed to be. He'll know what the other receivers on the field, the tight end, is supposed to do, what the back's supposed to do. And he'll like help guys get lined up. And if they're like in a no huddle situation and somebody doesn't know the play, they know they can look over at Carnell and he'll help them out and tell them what to do, because he just knows everybody's role on every single play. So to hear that from Brian Hartline, and then you hear that again repeated from Brian Daboll through whatever channels made it to James Palmer, like, that's a lot of stock putting into the fact that Carnell Tate is mentally elite.
I'm with you. I love it. I think that's the perfect way to put a bow on the show and forget 60 minutes. We went about 63 minutes. Appreciate the Audible Army, as always, for taking time out of their Friday morning, afternoon, wherever you are in the world, evening. Some of you are European. To join the show, thank you so much. The Titans are practicing tomorrow. Keep that in mind, Saturday. First open practice for the fan base. Hopefully some of you will be there in attendance. Graver and I will be back on Monday to talk about that practice, recap that practice, continue covering training camp in all facets. Yes?
Just one quick response to Higher Up Beats. Sheesh, begging for likes is starting to give Jeremiah Love at 4. I understand that it may feel a little cringy for me to sit here and beg the people on the stream to like the stream. What I will say is that before I started begging for likes, there were 10. And since I've started begging for likes, there are 121. So, cringe or not, it worked. You guys came through, and we appreciate it. It helps us grow the channel. It's like we just need a little click from you guys to help more people find the show.
Atlas asked, when is the next live? I mean, I don't know if are we going live Monday? We haven't discussed it, Atlas. You've got to be subscribed to the channel and have alerts on. Someone said here, I've never had Discord, but I would get it to listen to y'all just to make sure there's no confusion. Like, the pod's would be available in the same manner on YouTube, on Apple. There's no difference to how the pod's available. So however you currently consume the pod, Travis, nothing changes. So
yeah. And Discord functions multiple ways. There are obviously like text chats, and then we could do like game day live style sessions that are voice, like phone calls, like conference calls, where we're all just hanging out watching the game together. That could be a fun little wrinkle that we throw in. All right. Anything else, Justin, you want to sign us off?
That's going to do it for today's episode. We'll be back on Monday. Will it be pre-recorded? Will it be live? We have no idea. We'll figure it out on Monday, most likely. Until Monday, though, when you guys are back with the Music City Audible, talking Titans, training camp, practice, what happened over the weekend, possibly what happened on Monday. I think Monday might be the first padded practice of camp.
It is.
So we'll probably be live then, I'm going to guess. It's probably what's going to happen. Monday will probably be a long one because we might have to talk some Saturday, and we'll definitely be talking Monday as well. We shall see. Until Monday, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.